Silver Bullet Security Podcast with Gary McGraw. I'm your host, Gary McGraw, CTO of Cigital and author of Software Security. This podcast is co-sponsored by Cigital and IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine, where portions of this interview will appear in print in the September-October issue. You can get more information about IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine at www.computer.org/security. This is the third in a series of interviews with security gurus, and I'm very pleased to have with me now Marcus J. Rainham. Hello, Marcus.
Hey, Gary. Thanks for having me here.
Marcus is the chief of security at Tenable Security. He is the inventor of the proxy firewall, an excellent photographer, quite a good marksman, and a closet romantic. He lives in the hinterlands of Pennsylvania with two dogs, seven cats, N horses where N is greater than two, and his farrier wife. Marcus has one of the sanest voices in computer security today, a field in which common sense is less common than it should be. So let's get started, Marcus. The first thing that you're known for, I suppose, is that you invented the firewall, and it is certainly in widespread use. So the question is that good?
Well, first off, I didn't exactly invent the firewall. Sorry about that. But mostly what I did is I took a lot of ideas that people smarter than me had already had and kind of rationalized them and realigned them and fused them together and brought the first commercial firewall to market. Are firewalls a good idea? Well, firewalls are a great solution for the problems that they were designed to solve. The problem is that the Internet has gotten more complicated than the problems that firewalls can solve. And so we have these customers who buy firewalls and go, ooh, I'm protected, and don't realize that really they're somewhat protected, but they're dealing with, very complicated application mixes that they really can't understand, and the designers of the firewalls can't understand them either, and if you can't understand something, there's no way you can secure it.
So if you treat it as kind of a one-size-fits-all solution to security, you're in trouble.
Right.
But it has its place, certainly.
Right.
Just like everything, dang it.
Yeah, anybody who comes along and tells you, I've got a one-size-fits-all solution for pretty much everything, is either ignorant or lying.
Mm-hmm. Well, that seems to happen a lot in computer security, actually.
Yes.
So you've probably given, hundreds of talks in your career, maybe 1,000. What was your best talk ever?
My best talk ever would be a talk that I gave at Black Hat briefings, and it was a keynote. I think it was 98 or 90. I think it was 98.
Was it that Script Kiddies one?
No, that was 2000. The 98 keynote was the one where I quite seriously proposed that we scrap the entire software loadout that's being run on the Internet and start over and have something that's designed by people who actually know what they're doing and have a better understanding of the problem they're trying to solve, and that we blame the entire recoding effort on Y2K, which at that time was well-funded for fixes. Well, that was the way everybody in the room reacted. They all laughed, but actually I was deadly serious.
That's
and
a good
I think
idea.
It would have worked. I think it would have worked.
Huh, interesting. So sometimes it's hard not to become cynical when faced with the so-called progress in the field. Do you think, ultimately, that we're making forward progress? I mean, you've been doing this for what, about 15,
20 years?
20 years? Long time.
You know, I don't think we're making progress. I think the situation is getting worse. And then, if you look at the size of the computer security industry over its growth over time, and then you look at the rate at which systems are being penetrated, those curves are not correctly aligned with the demographics of computing. So, the problem is getting worse in spite of how much we keep spending. Now, I don't think there's necessarily a correlation between how much we spend and how much we get, because if there was a correlation between how much we spend and what we get, you could say it's negative, right? We should stop spending money on computer security so the problem will stop getting worse. The situation doesn't look very good right now.
So what's the silliest kind of stuff you've seen out there?
Oh, geez, we don't have enough time. We've only got, 20 minutes or something? We don't have enough time to talk about all the silly stuff that I've seen out there.
Surely there's one thing that comes to
mind. I think the stupidest idea that I see in computer security is the whole notion of penetration testing.
Hmm.
There's lots and lots of people who, make tons of money on it, and lots of people spend lots of money on it. But the basic premise of penetration testing is, here you've got something that you don't understand, and you're going to try to achieve understanding of it by having some outsider who also doesn't understand it do attacks against it simulating someone who doesn't understand it trying to figure it out. Now, if that's not the dumbest thing you've ever heard of, I don't know what is. I mean, if you want to understand, you know, whether a piece of engineering construction is going to do the job, you have to go back and you have to go look at your statement of the problem it's trying to solve, and then you have to go look at your design to see if the solution matches the design, which matches the scope and required strength of what you're trying to build. The problem is, of course, that, you know, it's too late to go back and look at all the networks that have been built in the industry and say, what's wrong with them? How do we fix them? Everybody basically wants to go, let's throw more Band-Aids at it and let's get some professionals in to come tell us where to stick Band-Aids.
Yeah, the old reformed hacker thing.
Right.
Now, I think the only saving grace for penetration testing might be that it's kind of a badnessometer. Some people don't know that they suck. And so learning that you're in very bad shape is an eye-opening experience for some. The only problem is when it gets treated really as a security meter of sorts.
Well, it's basic human nature to not believe you have a problem until someone comes along and really sticks your nose right into it, right? You know, I'm not going to believe that cigarettes cause lung cancer until I see the tumor. I mean, which is a stupid idea, but that seems to be a way that a lot of senior executives approach computer security as well.
Mm-hmm. And so maybe an exercise in showing them some stuff is helpful, but it's a good tactic only. It's not a good strategy. Maybe.
Yeah, well, from a strategic standpoint, if the problem is getting your executives to believe that computer security is relevant, you should be spending your money replacing your executives, not doing testing on your networks.
Yeah, unfortunately, the executives are the ones who make that decision.
Funny, isn't it?
Yeah. So your treatise, The Six Dumbest Things in Computer Security, is one of my favorite pieces of writing in computer security. Why do you think that our field is so full of baloney? I mean, why is it that people do these silly things and they don't just do the most obvious common sense stuff?
There's two things going on. First off, computer security, for all that it seems like it's been around for a while, is really a fairly new field. And while there is thinking that's been going on in computer security, there's only a small handful of people who are actually kind of trying to figure out what the laws of physics of computer security are.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a science like physics, you know, and the underlying rules have been well enunciated for quite some time, at least a good understanding of the underlying rules. So if someone comes along and says, I have a perpetual motion machine, people laugh at them and put that statement to a series of questions. But since computer security is so new and the underlying rules really aren't internalized by people, if someone comes along and says, you know, I have this one-stop doodad that sits on your network that will just fix security, a lot of people go, oh, that's great, I'll take five.
Maybe it's similar to what happened in the Old West when the snake oil guy showed up in his wagon.
That's exactly it.
Because people weren't sure what they had, and they just knew that maybe maybe somebody had a perfect solution.
And the other problem is just, you know, human nature, we want to reach for this simple solution. I mean, the best analogy that I keep coming up with for computer security is, you know, there's this multi-billion dollar diet industry in the United States. Everybody wants to be thin. Well, everybody knows that if you eat less and burn more calories, the second law of thermodynamics is going to take care of it and make you smaller. This is just a fact of physics, right? But instead, there's this huge multi-zillion dollar industry that's based on the predicate that you can eat a gallon of Ben and Jerry's a day, and all you have to do is take this one little pill, and you won't have to actually work out or eat less, which is fundamentally stupid. That's what's so amazing to me. You know, it's like there are people who will try anything to lose weight except diet and exercise. And there are people who will try anything to secure their networks except design them correctly, control the access levels within them, segment their networks, understand their traffic, and monitor things closely.
Right, right. But it seems, you know, so straightforward when you put it that way.
Yeah, it does. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, people like me, you know, the very few of us industry curmudgeons go around and say, hey, this is all stupid. Because when you've got a problem that people are treating like it's rocket science, but there's actually kindergarten solutions just sitting there in front of everybody, you kind of wonder what's wrong with people.
So you'd say there's no silver bullet for security?
I would say there's no silver bullet.
I gotcha. There is now. You're on it.
Ah, well. You got me.
So, lately, you've been harping on the importance of software security and building things properly, and I know you've always been a proponent of solid engineering, and of course you know how I feel about this. Do you think we're making any forward progress on that end of the equation?
It's slow. It's slow. People are starting to get it, but, you know, it's pushing a huge rock uphill. You know, and I talk to senior managers now, and I tell them, you know, you guys realize that you're spending a gigantic amount of resources on patching busted software. And they go, yeah, well, that's a drag. We've got all these FTEs that are doing nothing except patching. We've got these patching products and, you know, all this kind of nonsense. And then, you know, I nail them with the simple question, which is, have you ever done any kind of an analysis on, you know, how much it would cost to do it right and forget about it?
Mm-hmm.
And they go, is that even possible? Well, that's not that difficult. I mean, it's not easy. But, you know, this reminds me of a website that a friend of mine and I built back in 1996 or so, where we were doing it for a friend that had some peculiar security requirements. So we just custom coded this very small thing that was very simple, and we reviewed it, and we nailed the thing down as tight as we possibly could, and it was running on an old operating system that was minimized and stuff like that. The site is running absolutely untouched, unpatched, unmodified. We basically completely forgot about it. I don't think we even have the source code for it anymore. And, you know, you do it right, and then the cost of maintenance is zero.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you buy something that's awful and you try to patch it,
well, especially if it's being changed every second because it was so problematic to begin with.
Right, and that's the other part that I really don't understand, because when I first started off as a systems and network administrator, you know, I worked next to the guys from the mainframes at a hospital, and the mainframe guys understand this. It's, you know, the rules of production systems. You make it work, you don't touch it, and if it breaks, you fix it. But if it's not broken, you don't fix it. You sit in your office and you drink coffee.
I guess that was one of the problems that Microsoft was trying to address with their Patch Tuesday, you know, was the notion that these patches came out arbitrarily and often, and maybe they could just push them all out once a month. Do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing? What's happened?
I think it's insane. I mean, Microsoft has a difficult problem. Microsoft has addicted their customer base to a constant stream of features. And unfortunately, they've addicted their customer base to a constant stream of unreliability that comes along with that stream of features. You know, whereas, you know, the other way of looking at it would be, you know, following my favorite philosopher of science, Richard Feynman, who'd basically say, you know, if the design of your system doesn't say that it needs to be patched every Tuesday, and it needs to be patched every Tuesday, there's something fundamentally wrong with it, and you need to go back and you need to look at it and ask yourself, what am I doing that's stupid? And, you know, the fact that the most important operating system in the world is under such a high level of attack and appears to have so many chinks in its armor that it needs to have a formal mechanism where, you know, we're going to try to roll together all these bugs on a single day. Doesn't that seem kind of brain damage to you?
Yeah, and it certainly makes it sort of an easy target if they put all of the holes into one patch.
Yeah, but, I mean, you know, not even worrying about that. You know, imagine if you bought you bought your pickup truck from General Motors or whoever.
Ford, man, I got a Ford F-150.
Okay, good. Well, so you're F-150, you know, and Ford tells you, great, now you got to bring it into the shop every Tuesday because, you know, we've been making these things for 60 years now, and we still haven't figured out how to do it right. So you need to bring it in every Tuesday, and we're going to change a whole bunch of stuff. And then next Tuesday, Tuesday next month, we're going to change a whole bunch of stuff. But you look at, you know, engineering.
Well, then it'd be like a Ford F-150.10.15.4.
Exactly. Now, really, you know, what another way of looking at it is this could all be a part of an unarticulated strategy to force you to buy a new car every year and a half.
Sounds cynical.
Yeah.
So I've always been incredibly jealous of your creative marketing prowess, like the hilarious calendar that you made and the network security ticket. Where do you get these crazy ideas?
Oh, I have trained my dogs, Jake and Miles, to go out in the woods and they catch me ideas. they lie doggo down by the edge of the woods, and when the ideas creep down to the pond to drink in the mornings, they grab them and they snap their little neck.
Could you ship them over to Homeland Security? Because I think they need,
everyone
need
needs lots of ideas. Yeah, no. Please don't tell anyone that I've been poaching ideas. I don't know.
I am serious about that, though, because a lot of people that do technology, especially that do it at such a high level, don't really think creatively about hooking human minds or what makes people tick or what will make someone entertained. But you seem to do that.
I try. I do my best. The part that I've always been incredibly conflicted over is, you know, to create marketing and stuff that is going to reach out to people, it has to be funny. It has to show people, you know, look, you got a problem. Here's a different way of looking at things. And that's what's going to catch people's attention. Mm-hmm. But I'm conflicted inside myself because on one hand, you know, I want to slap these customers and say, geez, everything you're doing about computer security is just so incredibly stupid. Will you wake up? But on the other hand, I have to try to communicate with them in a way that's going to keep them from just shutting me out as, you know, a crazy guy who lives out in the woods. Mm-hmm. Internet security is the equivalent of Ted Kaczynski.
You mentioned DEFCON before, but you seem to give no quarter to hackers at all. And I wonder why not. Isn't talking honestly about attacks essential to getting past pretend security?
Talking honestly about attacks is essential, sure. I mean, you want to talk about paradigms for attack and defense. I mean, you know, the U.S. Army and most other nations that take warfare seriously have war colleges in which they examine both sides of attack and defense. I mean, you know, that is part of engineering discipline. It's part of the engineering discipline of understanding your problem before you go after it in the first place. The problem with the hacking scene and the whole way that scene is being played is, you know, they're uninvited into the scene, right? So essentially what they're really doing is they're victimizing us. I mean, this is another area when I float this that people just, you know, their heads explode because the industry is so accustomed to not thinking about it this way. But without hackers, without people probing and penetrating and releasing vulnerability information about our systems, we wouldn't need a computer security industry. Mm-hmm. I know that sounds silly, but it's a truism, and it is absolutely true to the extent of saying without burglars, we wouldn't need any locks. Think how much money we could save if we didn't have to buy any locks.
Yeah, it's just removal of the adversary. Really.
Yeah, but the part that people don't seem to want to accept is that there is a moral dimension to this, right? In a very real sense, by requiring me to protect myself and requiring me to protect my systems, they're victimizing me twice. First mm-hmm. off, they're making me spend all this money and time farting around with computer security when I'd rather be doing photography or playing with my dogs. So they victimize me once there. And then the second place they victimize me is if I don't do a good enough job defending against them, they get me anyway. Right? So the whole world, the whole computing world, is being doubly victimized by hackers.
Do you think they are helping to get us past pretend security? Could we do that with science alone, you think?
Well, again, if they weren't there at all, we wouldn't need security, right? We wouldn't need pretend security. We wouldn't even need.
Well, you know, if we didn't have oxygen on this planet, we wouldn't need any sort of fire control mechanisms.
Right. Well, basically, what you're saying is the evolutionary argument, which, you know, being an evolved human being that walks upright. You know, I apologize if, you know, any of your listeners are creationists, but being an evolved human being who walks upright, I can thank my evolved state on all of the predators that tried to eat my ancestors and failed, and all the viruses that tried to kill them and failed. Well, you know, you could thank the hackers in the same sense that we could thank the predators.
Just coevolutionarily.
It's coevolution, yeah. But you know what? I don't think that there were a lot of cavemen who looked at that saber-toothed tiger and said, thanks for making me better. and the hackers are asking us to do that. I'm sorry. You're not welcome.
So who's influenced your career the most? And stick to humans, please.
In computer security?
Sure. Or whatever way you want to answer it's fine.
You know, when I started, it happened entirely by accident. But I won't bore you with that story. But I started reading a lot of the writings of Richard Feynman, and I found that his way of thinking is so zany, organized, playful, yet severe. You know, he the way he advocates thinking about science, it has really permeated a lot of my life.
So that's now, great, yeah.
Yeah, now when I'm trying to approach a problem, I sit back, and the first thing I've done, and it's largely from you know, encountering this guy secondhand, the first thing I've done is trained myself to ask, is there any way of thinking about this problem that I haven't thought of? Mm-hmm. It's taking problem solving to another level. Before you just jump in and start trying to solve the problem, ask yourself, are there problem solving approaches that I should be considering before I start trying to solve this problem?
Have you watched the Six Easy Pieces lectures?
Oh, I've watched tons and tons and tons of stuff.
Aren't they great?
He's fantastic, and he's interesting, and he's another person that, you know, I'm in awe of, because, you know, Dr. Feynman saw a lot of human stupidity. He was intimately experienced with human stupidity, and he was also involved in one of the greatest pieces of human stupidity, primarily the creation of the atomic bomb. And yet he managed to retain a love of life and a love of humanity that I really envy.
So the final and most important question, what's your favorite power tool for use in home repair and improvement?
Favorite power tool? Well,
or school repair and improvement.
Well, the simple answer, of course, would be a cordless screwdriver. You know, cordless screwdriver.
I have to agree with you on that one.
Yeah, you can drill holes with them. You can drive screws with them. You can chase cats with them. You can do all kinds of cool stuff.
You can drive nails with them too, although it's not really
correct.
Optimal, but you
correct.
Can.
Although you know, there's probably cooler tools than that's just such a humble tool, you know.
Well, thanks, Marcus.
Well, my pleasure.
This has been a Silver Bullet Security Podcast with Gary McGraw. The September-October issue of IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine will feature a print version of this interview. In addition, the issue features articles on voting technologies and trust and trustworthy peripherals, as well as a carpet on building security in. Subscribe today at URL www.computer.org/security/BSI-sub. Show notes, links, and an online discussion are available at sigital.com/silverbullet. This is Gary McGraw.